Well, it is about 32 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock. This is Hannah Flohr, and I am joined here in Studio One by three borough officials for Borough Business. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 907-772-3808. I have got Assemblymember Thomas Fine Walsh in here. Hi, thanks
Hello.
For being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, and I don't have any of your mics up. Let's try that again.
Hey, yeah, happy to be here.
And I have Assemblymember Scott Newman here as well.
Good day.
And Public Works Director Carl Hagerman, who's going to walk us through the ordinance adjusting the 2024 budget for known changes.
Oh, the whole ordinance?
Yeah, the whole thing. No, we're going to touch on a few. We're going to start off first with Scott because you have to leave. On the agenda, one of the new items is a resolution to write a letter in support of Rebecca Himshute's House Bill 201. Can you tell us a little bit about why you put that on the agenda?
I feel it's important to, protect and conserve Alaska's fish and wildlife resources. This is something that has been kind of a loophole has been taken advantage of, I think, for a number of years regarding residency requirements. And currently the way it's written is to be a resident of Alaska, you have to have, you know, your primary domicile here. You can't have any claim any residency or any rights to another state, and then you have to have lived here for 12 months. But beyond that, there's nothing. Once you've accomplished that, you could claim a teeny tiny little 200 square foot cabin as your primary domicile, have a P.O. box here, and off you go, and there's no like follow-up requirements to hold people kind of to actually being a resident.
Mm-hmm. And so, that really affects the not just the cost of the license, but also the bag limits for how much people are able to get as well, right?
Well, especially when it comes to big game, because the big game tag fees are even though they are probably lower than other states, they're still kind of expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're a resident, we get free harvest tickets, but if you're a non-resident, then it's $300 per metal locking tag. So
big difference.
Yeah.
So this would then tie that residence to basically, it'd be the same as the permanent fund, right? So people would have to actually live here for 12 months in order to get that.
You have to live here for 12 months, but I guess it starts on a calendar year, not from the day that you got here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit of a, it'll be unfortunate for some people, because if they arrive, you know, January 15th of one year, they would not actually become a resident, that year, not January 15th the next year, but the following year,
because
it's one calendar year. But beyond that, the requirements are you can't be gone for more than 180 days.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are, then you have to have, you know, good and valid reasons.
Yeah. How is this going to, how do you see it impacting guiding and charter businesses as someone who is a hunting guide?
I'm a hunting guide. Most of the people that I guide they're all non-residents. So they're paying the non-resident tag fees and all that. They're paying their fair share. This is more of a an ability to gain control for enforcement for the people that are taking advantage of the system.
Mm.
And so that we know it's happening. We see it. There's nothing they can do about it because they can't, you know.
They don't have the enforcement mechanism.
Yes, exactly. There's no teeth to the law to, mm-hmm. you know, beyond you're here for 12 months and then mm-hmm. there's no way for them to have to prove that, you know, beyond that.
Okay. All right. So you guys are going to be talking about that tonight and possibly writing a letter to the legislature in support.
Yep. I would hope so.
Okay.
You know, to help conserve and protect and make people pay their fair share.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for popping in and taking some time out. I know you have to be somewhere.
You bet. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
All right. And moving on, we're going to talk about that ordinance to adjust the 2024 budget. We are not going to talk about, I'm not going to ask you to talk about the entire thing, Carl.
Okay.
But there are a couple, I wanted to talk about a couple of the big, big items. The first, which I know that you are very, very intimately involved with, is the transfer of the $880,000, a big chunk of change, from the Electric Department reserves to the Blind Slough Hydro Fund to finish out the project. So, it says in here that it's coming from the Electric Department reserves. Why do you need that extra amount? Can you explain a little bit about what that actually means for folks who haven't been following the Blind Slough Hydro project closely?
Yeah, no problem. So the hydro project has been ongoing for quite a while, and as many people know, there was a bond issue that was approved by the voters in 2019, I think. And so that allowed for a certain amount of funding to go towards this capital project. Also, the Scow Bay generator project was included in that bond issue. The problem actually was that at the time, we were going on the best information that we had, which was a detailed estimate of costs for the construction from our engineer. And so the bond amount was based on that. And unfortunately, with the state of increasing construction costs, materials costs, what have you, in that same period of time, the construction contract came in about $750,000 more than what the construction estimate was at the time of the bond issuance. So that's a big problem. We had planned on doing a budget adjustment at some point in the project, and excuse me. And during the course of the project, we had many different phases, including a equipment procurement phase and then the construction bid. There was an opportunity that came up for a Department of Energy grant based on projects that improved efficiency at hydroelectric projects. Our project that was already in process at the time was perfect for this grant. It's a small hydro grant. It's dedicated to in projects that increase efficiency, which ours does. And so we went for it. Put it together an application, which is not a small feat. It's not a one-pager. It's a many, many-page document. And the potential of this grant is about $2.7 million towards the project overall. And so that, if we received that grant, then basically the funding issues for the project would have been nil. However, we're still in the running for the grant, but we haven't been told that we're a recipient yet. So in order to, now that the project is ongoing and in fact winding down, we're getting to the end of the construction process and engineering process, and the project budget, unfortunately, isn't enough to close out, pay all the vendors and engineers that we have on the job. So there needs to be a budget amendment, and that does come from the electric fund reserves. And, of course, the hope is that grant from the Department of Energy will come through, and so we'll be able to put this money back into reserves and additionally offset some money in the project so that more of the bond money can be shifted over to the Scow Bay Generation Project.
Okay, and so just to make sure that we have it clear here, the money that is coming from the Electric Department reserves, that's, the Electric Department is the enterprise fund, and so that money is coming from that that enterprise fund and will then be bonded with the rest of the money. Do I have that correct?
Well, the money in the enterprise fund, in the electric enterprise fund, is all ratepayer money.
Yeah.
All the money that is that comes to that department is through rates of our customers. And so though that money is not part of a bond issue, it's not part of any debt, it's money that's basically been in savings.
Right.
To speak about it simply, that we're now shifting towards this project.
Gotcha. So people don't have to worry that it's just taxpayer money that is being put to use for this project.
Right.
It's coming out of a very specific fund.
It is.
Okay. Yeah. And then there's one other thing that is on here that I wanted to ask you about. Transfer wastewater reserves in the amount of $144,000 to this pump station for project. And I have to admit, I don't know anything about this wastewater project, and I didn't do my homework on it. So I'm happy to have you here to tell us just a little bit about what that is, because I know it's been an ongoing point of discussion at the borough.
Sure. This project has been ongoing for quite a while too. It got started before the pandemic and then got put on hold. We're finally to the point in this year, 2023, where we started moving forward on design, and we found that basically we need to replace this pump station. It is one of the largest pump stations in our wastewater collection system. It's very important to the community, and we can't have a situation where it does not function. And we're not quite there yet, but it's not in the best shape by any means. So it needs to be replaced. Land out at Hungry Point, where this pump station is available through the neighbors to construct the new pump station next to the existing pump station. And that seemingly simple endeavor is actually saving quite a bit of money in that project. There's kind of getting on another topic as far as the money and the land acquisition, because that's what I've been focusing on in this project for quite some time. The question about the supplemental budget is actually more geared towards the fact that we need to complete design. We're about 95% complete with the design, but we normally, as a department, will hire a regional engineer and company that can design and build the control system for our pump stations and also build the control panels. And we generally go directly to them outside of the main design contract because it's a specialized field. And so because this project does not have the funding 100% sorted out yet, we are approved to apply for a loan from DEC, but we still have yet to apply for that loan. And once we do, the funding will be set. But until that time, we have to get this design up to 100%. And to do that, we needed to transfer some money from wastewater reserves. Again, wastewater ratepayers put into that reserve account. And that way we can hire this engineer, get the design 100%, go out to bid.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to shift gears and talk about something that is very, very inexpensive, which is the sale of the fire engine, Engine 5, for $1. Tom, do you have any backstory on that you want to share with us?
Not a tremendous amount. I mean, I'm glad that it's happening. I'm glad that the new engine got here. That was, it was quite an undertaking, and it took some time to get it all fitted out and get it up here, but it seems to be doing great, and I'm glad that the existing engine is going to be put to good use here and continue to be useful. That's really encouraging, actually. While we're on the topic of adjusting the budget here for known changes, which is I find very interesting. Very interesting topic, for sure. I have a few questions since Carl's here. I'm kind of curious. So, I mean, what are the reserves looking like after taking a $900,000 hit? Is that gonna put you guys in a precarious situation, or is that can you absorb that?
At the present time, we can absorb that. We are right at the lower limits of where we like to be in our reserve account after this transfer. Right around $3 million is the lowest amount that we like to have in that reserve account for the electric fund. And that's basically due to some of the infrastructure that we have. If it fails, we need to be pretty nimble
in being able to replace that. I would imagine there's a bottom, a floor, right, that you don't want to go below, because, right, if something happens, you don't have the capacity to address it. And is some mechanism going to kick in that's going to try to pump up those reserves again, like a rate change, or is the idea just to kind of build those reserves back up over time without really changing much?
Yeah. There most likely will be a rate increase at some point. We'll look at that probably during the budget process for this next year. At present, knowing that we're right at the minimum level for our reserves, that wouldn't be the only thing that that kicks in, the discussion of a rate increase.
Right, certainly. And then this grant, which may still materialize, how would that, and this is more of a question for the finance director, but I'm curious how that would fit back into the budget once it was received. Would it go directly to the reserves and top that up, or would it go into the broader borough budget? How does that work?
That's a really good question. So that grant was applied for the hydro project specifically. So it would have to be applied towards the capital project fund, the hydro improvements that have been done. But the effect of that is if that $2.7 million is put towards the project, then that's outside of the $800,000 that we're transferring. There's a good amount of money that has been already put into that project from electric fund reserves. And so that money can be displaced by the grant money and moved back to it. It all has to stay within the electric fund.
Indirectly, though, it could make its way back to the reserves, though, and then yes. Kind of take some pressure off the ratepayers.
Absolutely. It could be reserves, but most likely, because we have the Scalbay Generation Project also coming up, also very important, it will probably get mostly pushed towards that direction.
Okay. Well, do you have a sense of the time frame in terms of when you would find out about that grant?
I had hoped I would find out by it already.
Okay.
We've applied pressure through the federal delegation to the Department of Energy to try and break some information free, and the best information that we've received is that we were still eligible to receive it, that the department was openly oversubscribed for the grant, meaning there are more applicants than the money available.
Yeah. Okay.
So they had to back up and do a ranking of all the applicants, and so we're still in that.
Are we in? Are we competing nationally for this grant money?
That
always worries me, because I worry people in D.C. are going to look at Petersburg and say, like, well, you know, 3,000 people out in the middle of wherever. Why don't you like drive your car to Juneau or something? Or you know, like they're just it's always worrying. I think that a lot of rural communities in Alaska get looked over a little bit when it comes to nationally competitive grant applications for a number of reasons, but I think population maybe is one of them, which is not our fault.
Right. The good thing about this grant is that it was focused on quote-unquote small hydro. So I think we still stand a very good chance of getting this money, and we're crossing our fingers.
Well, and before we move on, too, I just wanted to pipe up real quick about the pump station. You know, I think that's actually a really interesting project. It has, you know, unfortunately been pretty expensive, but like Carl said, you know, it needed to be replaced. This was like a crucial piece of infrastructure, and it was only a matter of time whether we do it now or we do it later. And the cool thing about, you know, doing it now is, you know, there's the potential for residential development now in that area at a significantly reduced cost, because all of the investment in getting, you know, the expensive utilities to the area will have been done. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really exciting, because it's a beautiful area.
That's a really interesting point. So in order to work on this pump station, you have to put in a bunch of utilities to be able to develop it. Is that what you're saying, Tom?
Well, we're changing the way that every pump station has a force main, the pressurized main that comes from the pump station to forward the water along the way. And so we're changing the location of the force main, and mm-hmm. we're pushing it uplands, you know, through some undeveloped subdivision areas that we're going to gain some area that will have access to gravity sewer that didn't have before.
Okay.
And so that's what Tom's talking about, is that there is now some potential for easier development in that area behind Hungry Point.
Mm. How do you see that playing out? Is that something that the borough is looking at? Is that something that you...
Well, I mean, we've considered in the past, you know, I mean, the borough for a while was considering very seriously the cost of you know, putting in utilities for a residential subdivision. And we got some, you know, estimates, cost estimates, and there wasn't really any appetite, you know, based on the expense. But I think this could potentially be a situation where, you know, if we consider that again, if the borough's interested in you know, financing development of utilities for a subdivision to open up some new lots in an area, this might be an opportunity. It may also be a great opportunity for a private developer to do the same thing. Either way, you know, like Carl said, is one of the hardest parts, right, is getting the sewer utilities up to these properties, and that will have been done. Not a huge area, but, you know, a really neat area of town for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and everything makes a difference. And speaking about housing, another thing on the agenda is scheduling a work session with the Mental Health Trust Land Office. And, you know, this is something that we will definitely be discussing in the future. This is just the scheduling of the work session. But just to clarify what that is, you know, in September, the borough voted unanimously to write a letter to DNR rejecting the Trust Land Office's plat or their subdivision design for that subdivision out between Papke's Landing and the Blind River Rapids. And so this is basically to schedule a meeting with the Trust Land Office to figure out how the Trust Land Office and the borough can work together.
Yeah. And I guess, so we're still trying to find a time that both parties can meet. And it sounds to me like they actually intend to come here in person, which I think is really cool. You know, I really appreciate when people, you know, come to these meetings in person instead of via Zoom. So I'm really looking forward to that session. I think it's an interesting issue, and looking at the plat maps of the land that the Mental Health Trust you know, owns out there, it's extensive. It's a big part of of the community. So, you know, what happens to it in the future will make a big difference. So I'm really excited to sit down and see, you know, learn what I can from them. You know, I've spoken with Liz Cabrera in the borough about some of the issues with their platting out there, and you know, I think there are some questions people may have about, you know, how things are organized. But on the whole, I don't think it's really a disaster. You know, it's a little alarming, you know, to you know, sit with the fact that an outside entity owns so much land on the island. And they can kind of do with it whatever they want, but that's always been the case. I think we're really only realizing that now. I think the sale of that property near Blind Slough got put a lot of people on notice, but it's not like anything changed. That was always, you know, it was kind of bound to happen eventually.
And just to clarify, a thing that I didn't initially understand is that, you know, the borough sent that letter rejecting the plat for the subdivision, but the borough doesn't actually have any sway in whether or not the land office sells the land, because the Trust Land Office owns the land.
It gets confusing. I'm frankly not, and fortunately I'm not the one on the phone with mental health here dealing with this.
Yeah.
You know, that the people in borough administration know a lot more about this than me, but I you know, the borough does have some say in the platting, but I don't know for sure whether there's ever an opportunity for, you know, the community, for the borough to weigh in and actually veto something. But, you know, there is another conversation ongoing about whether or not, you know, that's an authority that the borough should take over, whether we should have platting authority for the entire borough or for a part of it. You know, I've thought the idea of having platting authority for the island makes a lot of sense. I mean, the borough is extensive. If you look at it, it goes all the way to the border of Canada, and it would probably be, you know, an administrative burden that we don't want to pay for, basically. But at the same time, having platting authority for the island seems to make a lot of sense. You know, I mean, obviously people are concerned about how things are set up, you know, or they're concerned about, you know, whether people are too concerned about how things are set up, you know, and so either way, it's something that I think everyone is interested in. So. I'm excited to have the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And then real quick before we run out of time here, Carl, you, I was told by Debbie Thompson that you're the one to talk about.
I'll have to talk to Debbie.
Should have her send me to somebody else. There is a resolution to vacate and convey a portion of the Ramona Street right-of-way between North Nordic Drive and Valkyrie Street. I am not going to read the whole thing. Can you talk a little bit about what this is? I am admitting on air how little homework I did, for I did do homework. I just did not get to this particular one, so I'm going to need you to fill me in on what this is about. This is Resolution A under New Business.
Sure, and this is the topic that I got kind of sidetracked when you asked me about the supplemental budget, because this has been also ongoing for a while. The fact that we needed this property next to the pump station to save some costs in the construction.
Okay.
So we started working with the neighbors, and Swanson family has been extremely gracious about the project and the need to help out to save costs. So in that vein, the department's been working hard with them to try and make sure that they weren't left behind and treated poorly because of the project. It's the issue in front of the assembly is to vacate a portion of the Ramona Street right-of-way that is actually right next to their existing home and behind the existing pump station. That's some land that the borough doesn't really use right now. There's an overhead electric line going through it, but other than that, that's really not usable for us. And so vacating that, dedicating it to the Swansons in exchange for a portion of their land on the other side of the pump station and an easement where we can put the utilities between Nordic Drive and Valkyrie Street right-of-way made a lot of sense. When we look at that as a borough, we have to look at land values to see if this deal is good for the borough. And strictly in terms of dollars and cents, the assessor put values on all these properties that said the Swansons would owe the borough some $27,000, you know, to move forward with this. But I'm asking the assembly to approve the vacation without seeking that reimbursement, because the bottom line is that the Swansons' help in this project has saved well over $100,000 in the construction. So that's the recommendation to the assembly tonight.
Okay, and you said that they need to, the move needs to be good for the borough, but it sounds like you can make moves without it being strictly economically good for the borough on paper.
Right. The assembly can approve terms and conditions of a deal like this, and so I'm asking them to consider the goodwill of the Swansons in all of this as reimbursement.
All right. Well, we are almost out of time. Do you have anything either of you want to add real quick before I turn things over to the DJ?
I will say real quick, the assembly was kind enough to send me up to the Alaska Municipal League conference in Anchorage recently, and there were, you know, a lot of really fascinating meetings. It was a really cool opportunity to get together elected officials and municipal employees kind of and have everybody sort of yell at each other and air their grievances. But two of the real standout meetings, easily the best attended that I went to, were about local government action on housing. I thought there were a lot of really interesting ideas thrown around there. A lot of communities are dealing with the same issues we are. And the other one was disaster preparedness and disaster response efforts, which I think is increasingly important. I was struck by the fact that a lot of the panelists spent time talking about wildfire and tsunami responses, but all of the questions afterwards were about increased rainfall and landslides, soil erosion, that type of thing, which obviously in Southeast is forefront on everyone's mind. The mayor of Craig was there, and he spoke, you know, really eloquently on behalf of his community and Wrangell, you know, about the threat of landslides and sort of the response and the cost of dealing with that type of natural disaster. So that's, you know, I think something really interesting that our community should probably also consider, you know, seeing that we're surrounded by a lot of the same topography and we see, you know, landslides happening on Kuprinoff, for instance. So I'm really curious to know sort of what posture we're in as far as like how prepared we are as a community and also regionally.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, yeah, one of the big takeaways for me.
Okay, interesting. That sounds great. Thank you both so much for coming in.
You're welcome.